Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show, and I am Paul Winkler, and he is Evan Barnard, and he is Ira Work, and we're all hanging out here together, getting ready to talk our favorite subject.
Cooking?
Second favorite subject.
Donuts?
We're doing cooking. That's
we're doing 3 hours on donuts.
He says he's addicted to cooking shows. What?
He Who is? Said I was addicted?
You did.
You did.
Yes. Yeah. See?
I should post it on Facebook.
You can't. I know you did.
That it was my guilty
You think
pleasure.
I don't pay any attention to anything you say. No, that's not true. So, yeah, we're going to be in rare form today. What do you think?
It didn't take us long to get off track, did it, Paul?
Not at all. No. So yeah, there's a lot to discuss today, and actually, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I got this email, and it was a contract from a person in a far off land.
Okay.
His friend of mine.
Oh,
and he sent this thing.
I thought it was a
contract.
Scam.
No. Yeah, well, kind of was. You know, that's what
contract
I was thinking.
No, but it was land
a, it was
email.
An annuity. It was an annuity contract, could say yeah, it was a scam.
Got it.
Now it was something that he had bought, and I thought just tell the story. He had bought this thing from a friend, and I think a lot of times they don't necessarily mean anything ill, but it was something that turned out to be really bad as far as an accumulation standpoint. And I go, man, let's just do this. We got to get on a phone call. We're going to get on a phone call with the insurance company, because if I tell you what you've got, you won't believe it.
Boy, that's the truth.
I know. And it is so true. And I had another friend of mine. Back to the first one. But I'm looking at this contract, and I'm just beside myself with the language in this thing, in that I'm reading, about fixed interest, initial premium allocations, indexed interest accounts. I'm reading about, the back end surrender penalties, and they started at 10%, which is pretty big. And then the crediting methods that they were using here, they had crediting methods that were just beyond convoluted, and indexed interest accounts, one or more indexed interest accounts will be made part of this contract as more part of more riders. And I'm reading this stuff and going, can you even imagine being an investor that is not initiated in this stuff, trying to figure out what on earth that they own? And it's got talking about participate, non-participating contract, and then talking about the annuitization rates, and then getting into the market value adjustment riders and market value adjustment and how the calculation, the MVA factor equals J minus I times N divided by 12. I'm not kidding. I'm not making this stuff up. It's that bad. And as I'm in the premium enhancement riders, that sounds good, but you read it, it's like, oh gosh, that's not so great. But anyway, but in essence, he put $400,000 into this thing, and it grew by $5,000 over an 8-year period. I mean, that's basically it. Yeah, it's just really, really.
And no withdrawals over that time period.
No withdrawals whatsoever.
But his principal was safe.
Oh yeah, it was very safe. But that, and then I have another conversation with another friend in a far off land. Nobody from the Nashville area, but it's just like people that I know call up me and say, hey, Paul, And the question that got me was about Roth IRA conversions.
Oh, yeah.
Should I be doing Roth IRA conversion? And I said, well, in your situation, you're still working. You're still at full income. And I'm explaining the difference between your marginal tax rate. So the last dollar you earn is going to be taxed at, 22%, 24%, 37%, whatever.
Let's just say the higher rate.
Yeah, it's the highest rate, or the highest rate that you're going to be in right at this point, But then you get to retirement time, and you might be, let's see, married and pulling in $30,000 of income, and no taxes on that. It could be that, and then 10%. You might have a little bit at 10% income tax rate. So
yeah.
And this isn't a high-income, super high-income guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, right now, he's got some decent income, but the reality is that his tax rates, because of the way the marginal system works, down in the future.
Right.
You know, most likely.
Most likely his average rate will be lower.
And then
sure.
The point that I made is that, you know, we have this possibility because a lot of people are being pushed to do Roth IRA conversions now,
mm-hmm.
that the government could be looking down the road 10, 15 years and going, gosh, we don't have enough taxable income coming in. We got to do something. Let's set up, like Europe has, consumption taxes, right? And I'm explaining this to him.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't even know what to believe, who to believe in, you know. So I'm going, well, believe yourself. I want you to get that mm-hmm. you are not stupid.
Right. Yeah.
That you can understand what you need to know. Take a little time and give yourself credit that you have the sense to figure out what's right, because I'm telling you, the investment industry will not protect your interest, or the government will not protect your interest, because we live in a country that basically says people have freedom to run businesses the way they want to, and you don't have, even though you have a ton of regulations in the financial world.
Right.
You do not have the regulations that they have in, let's say, the medical field, or let's say the accounting field, or in the law field, or other areas. And investing is different than anything else out there. Case in point, I can look at the past performance of a plumber and figure out whether they're likely to do well in the future in doing my plumbing.
Right.
I can look at the past performance of a doctor to figure out whether they're good at a certain type of surgery and know whether I might want to put my trust in this person. With the financial industry, if you look at track record,
mm-hmm.
which is so often all we look at, and what these annuities are sold on is what would have worked over the past 10 years.
Yes, under past assumptions.
Yeah. And then you're given this idea that somehow or other, this is going to be possibly a good investment for you. But then the next 10 years is totally different than what the previous 10 years was.
Yep.
And you end up in a world of hurt.
Well, there's another problem there, though. And that is a lot of the brochures that they're presenting, they're not using the last 10 years. They're cherry picking 10-year periods, so they might be going
back from
1994
to
2004,
sure.
or 1987
sure.
to 1996.
Sure, yeah, no, absolutely, Ira. So that's, you know, so he didn't really get, and I said, you know, this isn't something about do you trust somebody or not. Go research if you don't believe me or anybody, and you shouldn't just blindly. Go look at what I'm saying and say, does the tax code work the way he's... Because
right.
I'm telling you, we had financial advisors. There were guys that actually followed a guy, and he was huge in the financial industry. He put together a program that had an acronym, and it was LEAP.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And to the public, it stood for Lifetime Economic Acceleration Program. To the insurance agents selling life insurance as an investment, it was let each agent produce.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what the acronym basically stood for in the industry. And one of the things that they taught in there is how life insurance could be this great accumulation vehicle, and it was like a Roth IRA.
It
was the equivalent of a Roth IRA, and it couldn't have been further from... You know, further from the truth and more misleading.
Right.
It was horrible. So what happened is he would do this where he was talking about why you should do this. He said, look, if you go and pay taxes right now, the seed versus the crop,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you think about it, if you're a farmer, would you rather pay taxes on the seed, that little tiny thing, which is like your deposit
right.
to the investment? Or do you want to pay taxes on the crop when it comes in, this massive field of grain and corn and whatever you're actually growing?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes way more sense to pay taxes on the little tiny seed. And it sounded really good.
Right.
And then what he would do is he would say, here's your tax rate right now. What do you think is going to happen? Are tax rates going to go up or are they going to go down?
Right.
And people would say,
mostly up if you ever ask them.
Yeah, they're going to go up. But he wouldn't explain the marginal nature of our tax system, where you have your first income tax is zero, and then the next income is taxed at 10, a little bit at 12, 22, 24, and then it gradually went up, called a graduated tax system. He just assumed that the tax rate that you paid in retirement was a flat tax rate on everything.
Right.
That you had no standard deduction. It wasn't even in the calculations. And agents ate this up because it justified selling a high commission product
right
to the public. Really frustrating. And, you know, as I thought about it, I thought, wow, how do you solve this conundrum that investors, and I get it. It's like, how am I going to understand all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
How do I get this if even financial people are fooled by it? So much of what is taught in the financial industry.
You know, thinking about just that last sentence, I honestly don't know how much of the, I'll say the average agent, which is human, they're not crooks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much they're fooled by it. Or how much they just literally don't bother learning it because the pay is so good or the commission is so high. You know, like, I think a lot of them think, I can't understand this, but I can say, hey, how would you like to get market returns with no risk? Boy, you could say that 100 times a day. I honestly don't know how much of them are being fooled or they just don't care.
I think there's so, and Evan, I was thinking about that a lot today. As I'm walking around my yard, just
listening
just
to an audiobook.
No, I was actually I was weed eating.
Oh, okay.
Because he's like, well, why do you, well, because that's where I think.
Yeah, I
but
get it.
I was just thinking about how often people are pulled in.
Yeah.
Wealth without risk. Remember the book
Charles
title,
Gibbons.
Guys? Yeah, remember
Charles
the book
Gibbons.
Title?
Absolutely.
I never heard that.
Incredibly popular book in
My
the
dad
1980s.
Had that. My dad had that.
Incredibly popular book in the 1980s. I'm surprised you didn't run into it because you've been around this longer than me. But, you know, and then I'm thinking, you know, gain without pain. I'm thinking, right. As many calories as you want to consume with no weight gain. You know, I'm just thinking, how many times do we get pulled in things because we have this wishful thinking?
Yep.
That somehow we can get something for nothing. And I was thinking about that. There's an old Rush song, uh-huh. Rush, the great three-piece band from, Toronto. They had that song, you can't get something for nothing. You can't get freedom for free.
Uh-huh.
You won't get wise with the sleep still in your eyes, no matter what your dream might be, was the line in the song.
Oh, that's a pretty good line.
It was really good line. Yeah, super, super good line. But it was, people do want something for nothing, and it sells.
Oh, yeah.
And you are a mark if you're a person that thinks you're going to get something for free or get something for nothing.
Well, the fact is it's all over Facebook. All of these things that have been around for the last 40 years that I saw, the insurance sales, I was doing that back in the 80s and the 90s. You know, do you want to invest taxable, tax deferred or tax free?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We didn't call it LEAP. It was just the way we sold it.
Mm-hmm.
But you started this segment off with the Roth IRA conversions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern that you have.
Yeah, and the reason I said that, let me just go back just real quickly to tie it together for you, then make your point.
Uh-huh.
But the reason the person was selling it as a Roth IRA, he wasn't even talking about conversions.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't even talking about that. That was just a segue into, he took something that the person had heard was a decent thing, Roth IRAs, and was trying to use it to sell life insurance. It was an unrelated thing. But that guy knew when the guy was talking about Roth conversions, which didn't make sense for him.
But you
in this
also,
guy's case.
But you had also mentioned if the government needs money,
mm-hmm.
if you did this conversion,
yes,
and the government needs money, will they perhaps figure something out to be able to tax the money coming out of the Roth?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1969, the government noticed that there were just 155 people that were getting away with not paying any taxes based on their high income because of all these little loopholes they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
And in 1970, they came out with the alternative minimum tax.
Oh, that's a really good example, Ira. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here it was. I mean, they were using like municipal bonds and other type of things and had this really great income.
Sure.
So now, I mean, in 69, they didn't have the computers they have today. So nor did we have the national debt that we have today. So if they need to figure out some way to tax that Roth IRA money, and that's why I have my concerns about doing conversions with my clients.
Yeah, you have to be super, super careful about it. Like, you know, one of the things that I will often do is conversions are very, very low rates. You know, I don't like going. Sometimes I have been known to go into the 22% rate, 24% sometimes in certain circumstances. But there are a lot of times that I'm really concerned about it simply because of the fact that I just don't necessarily trust.
All trees don't grow to heaven, as you say.
Yeah, for sure. And you could look at it and say, you know, 10, 12, and we're, you know, 10 or 12% tax bracket.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's a...
That's a decent income if it's if you're married filing jointly, going to the top of that bracket's a pretty decent
it
number.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. That's, you know, that's a really good point, Evan. You look at that and you go, wow, you know, for a lot of people, you're up 100,000 plus. And you're still in that 12% tax bracket.
You know, just literally thinking about just when I said that, just from some other reading I did yesterday. Some of the retirement planning that people need to consider, just because of where culture is, I'm not advocating this. I just think it's going to be something that people need to factor in now, is if you're used to brackets of married filing jointly and you get divorced at 57, at 58, at 59.
Or widowed.
And you convert it, or widowed.
Yeah.
And you've done all these conversions at some bracket and all of a sudden you're single. And, you know, it may be something that you want to actually accelerate because you're going to be in a huge bracket down the road. And I've had a couple people.
You have to
face that.
There's so much to think about. Very, very true.
Like, why did I owe so much this year? Well, you know.
Yeah.
A spouse passed away.
Yeah. I think that there's so much to think about. And that's why typically what we do, you know, in the planning process is model different scenarios. You know, what happens if this happens? You know, what happens if you pass away at this particular age? And what happens if you, and I'll ask people, you know, life expectancies, what do your parents live to? You know, things like that. And just really, really think hard about these things. Because quite often what has happened in this industry is people just use those conversions as it's kind of a sales tool.
Right.
You know, hey, look what we do. We do this kind of thing. And it sounds sophisticated. And so, hence, people get pulled into something that they may or may not be in their best interest to do. But there are a lot of things to consider. Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Every one of the offices is run by somebody with 20 plus years experience. They're all degreed planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call. And we look forward to seeing you soon. RMDs, Evan.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not sure how many segments we did over the last 3 years on the changes to required minimum distributions after the SECURE Act, particularly on inherited IRAs.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, what time is it? You know,
it's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is.
There was a notice promulgated this week, and heirs now get more time to keep their money in inherited retirement accounts. So what's basically happened is both the complexity of the law as well as practitioners still really struggling to understand exactly how much and who has to take what out of an inherited IRA if you're not what's called an eligible designated beneficiary.
So spouse, you're not the spouse,
a minor, you know, you're not 10 years younger and all that kind of stuff. But they've now granted another waiver for 2024 that if you forgot to take your required minimum distribution out of an inherited account, it's penalty free until they can, you know, put warnings on enough cigarette packs that says, hey, you've got to take your money out of your IRA at some point.
So it's kind of like this idea that you have 10 years to do it.
Right.
They were talking about making it that you took a little bit out each year in the 10-year period.
Yes.
Was one of the things being talked about. Now,
the law.
Yeah, that's what I had heard, that they did that, but they keep making exceptions is what I have heard. Yeah.
So, I mean, the easy way to think about it is if the account was subject to RMDs, required minimum distributions, to the decedent, if they were having to take an RMD, when you inherit, if you're not an eligible designated beneficiary, you are subject to RMDs. Even if you're 26 years old, 32 years old, you're subject to a required minimum distribution. That was a huge change in the law. What confused everything was this 10-year rule of it's got to be gone in 10 years. And if you weren't subject to RMDs before you passed, then the beneficiary doesn't have to take anything out until year 10.
They
could just put it off and just get clobbered in the last year, you know, however they want to do it. But they changed the rules 2 or 3 times. Congress wrote it, and then the IRS interpreted it one way. Then they changed the interpretation, and there was just enough confusion that I think, to their credit, the IRS has said, okay, this still really isn't clear. And we don't want a backlog of 10% penalties trying to chase this money down.
Yeah.
And so we're going to give people another bogey for this year.
So primarily the people that have inherited accounts from people that were
over
75, let's say that, you know, you were 73, 74, the person that passed away was, you know, because it, you know, 70 and a half, then you jump to 72, then you got 73, and then you have, if you're born in the 1960s, it's going to be 75, and you know, if whoever you inherited the account from, I just want to make sure people are clear on this, was taking a distribution from the IRA because they had to, not just because they wanted to pull money out to live off of, but because they had to, required minimum distribution, they are requiring that you get it out over a 10-year period, but that the distributions take place every single year. But since nobody seems to be clear on it, they keep giving you a waiver so you're not in trouble if you missed.
I don't think they're going to give a waiver on the 10 years, though.
No. I didn't mean that.
Well, I know, but if they keep kicking this can down the road, everybody's going to have to pull it out in 10 years.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think, to me, the point is, make sure you're going over this stuff with your advisor. And this is one of those areas where, you know, kind of like you were talking about in the last segment of, you know, trying to think things are easy or, you know, trying to make it convenient, no pain. This is not really an area where you want to just do it yourself. I mean, there's enough vagaries of the law. You really want to get some advice from somebody, and ideally someone that actually knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And don't end up 3 years from now, you have some 30%, 40% penalty accumulating because you didn't understand.
And it's especially, I just know from my own perspective at doing this as long as I have, that as people age, it doesn't get any easier to keep track of all this stuff. And then when they make changes later on, it can be confusing, and it can be, it's just so easy to make mistakes.
Right.
I mean, every time they make a tax law change, we jokingly say that it's the Accounting and Financial Planning Tax Act.
Because job security. You know,
yeah, it's Job Security Act, exactly. So keep in mind, keep that in mind. And when are they ever going to figure this out? I don't know, but eventually.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.